would you accept that that section of the population, that there's a significant overlap with the section of the population that rejects scientific medicine, that rejects vaccines, and that follows things like homeopathy?
No, it's still fake news. And if you repeat it a third time, it will still be fake news, because we have been successful in the most recent state elections.
This is Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading episode 135 for the 26th of May, 2022. I'm not going to do an editorial here. I'm putting it after the interview for reasons that will be obvious when you hear it. But I want to say thanks to all of the patrons on Patreon. I really appreciate everyone who donates there. We don't get any huge amount of money out of it, not nearly in the same league as some other Irish podcasters that I could mention, but it pays for things like the web hosting, and Kevin and myself basically donate our time for free. It's also a great morale booster when we get a new patron on Patreon. It lets us know that there are people out there who listen and appreciate the podcast. We make a big effort to cover things that are undercovered in Irish media, and you're more than welcome to listen for free. But if you think that you could do the same as the other donors and throw in the price of a cup of coffee once or twice a month, there's details of how to do that on the website and at the end of the show. The German Green Party is a little bit older and a little bit more successful than the Irish Green Party. They're, of course, in government, but they're the second rather than third party of government as they are in Ireland. The German Green Party is also the leading party of government in the state of Baden-Württemberg. In fact, the German Green Party is in government in 10 of the 16 German states, including in Berlin. And in the European Parliament, they have 21 of the 96 German MEPs, and their leader is Reinhard Bütikofer. And he's on the line with me now.
No, stop. That's not true. I'm not the leader of the delegation. The leader of the delegation is Rasmus Andresen from Schleswig-Holstein. I'm just the oldest person in the delegation, but
you're
not
the senior person then. I will correct that. Excuse me. Reinhard is the senior member of the German Green delegation in the European Parliament. Reinhard, I know that you speak very good English, but I wonder if you can understand Russian at all. And when you see on the news painted on Russian tanks in Ukraine and on warplanes the words "Na Berlinia," what does that mean to you?
Well, I must own up to the fact that I did learn some Russian when I was 16 years of age. But that didn't take me far, and there are just very few Russian words that I would recognize, and the words you quoted are not among them.
So I would be
at a loss.
I will translate, and I'm sure you speak way more Russian even than me. But "Na Berlinia" is Russian for "to Berlin," and I'm wondering what message you think that the Russian military is sending when they're writing graffiti on their own military hardware saying "to Berlin."
Well, I guess that is nationalist version of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. The immemorial victory that they are still very proud of was when Russia, together with the United States, France, the UK, and many other allies, defeated Nazi Germany. And in the Bundestag building, we still have to this day graffiti from Russian soldiers that conquered that building in 1945. So we also remember when they last time went to Berlin, and in a way, we're grateful that they helped defeating Nazi Germany. But any comparison between the Germany of 1945 and the Germany of today is, of course, completely misguided. And I would say if you're looking for Nazis today, you would more probably find them in the Kremlin than you would find them in Berlin.
That's really my question. You're comparing and saying there's no comparison with the government of Germany now and the one that was defeated in 1945. How would you compare the Soviet government of 1945 with the current government in Russia?
Well, of course, the Soviet government in 1945 was led and controlled and dominated by one person, one dictator, Stalin. Mm-hmm. And he certainly is responsible for literally millions of deaths throughout his reign. But later, during the Cold War, the Soviet Union transformed into a status quo power. The Soviet Union was willing to make arrangements that, for instance, in 1975, in the context of the Helsinki process, with regard not only to trade, but also to human rights. And the Soviet Union even willingly consented to the principle that every European country had the sovereign right to decide its own alliances and allegiances. And that is the principle that is now being invoked by the Ukrainian government, that says we are a sovereign state just like any other around Europe, and we want to insist on implementing that principle. Whereas Putin today, Stalin's successor, or maybe I should say the successor to Ivan the Terrible, Putin is a revisionist politician. He is not a status quo politician. He wants to overturn the security architecture that has been developed over the last roughly 30 years. He's a dangerous man with imperialist appetites.
What do you think about the German government's response to that?
Well, that is, of course, hotly debated, not just in Berlin and in Germany, but also in many European capitals, including in Brussels and the European Parliament.
Would you agree, Leonard, would you agree that there is a spectrum of responses? And I would not argue that Germany is sympathetic to Moscow, but it's one of the most sympathetic countries in Europe. Isn't that true?
That's not how I would describe the situation. I would say that Germany has harbored many misunderstandings, many illusions about Putin's Russia. Germany has for many years closed its eyes. When I say Germany, I should be more precise. Mm-hmm. Governing parties, the conservatives and the social democrats, and also most of the liberals, were complicit in ignoring the realities that our East European friends tried to point out to us. I would argue that my own party, the Greens, have been more far-sighted. Called out Putin's aggressive use of energy policy as a coercive tool. I recall raising this very issue already in 2004, together with friends from other European countries like Carl Bildt from Sweden or Democratic and Republican friends from the US Congress. So We have always opposed Nord Stream 2, for instance, never considered that a European project.
This is a gas pipeline from Russia directly to Germany to deliver Russian gas, which has, I think the building is complete, but it has not been commissioned because of the war.
And it will not be commissioned in the future either. It's a
a lost investment, a sunk investment by now. We have been more open to working with our Eastern European partners, even though some of them are really difficult partners, like the Polish. But I would say not all of Germany has been complicit with this long-standing effort to just paint too rosy a picture of German-Russian relations. But now that Putin has indeed done what a lot of people in Germany couldn't have imagined, there has been a turnaround. It's called Zeitenwende in German, and that word means a turn of historic dimension. And I would not argue that we're fully living up to what the word promises, but there has been a decisive shift for decades. Not just the Greens, all German parties, all German democratic parties opposed exporting arms into a hot conflict. That had been a unanimous sort of stance that we took. We did not want to be supplying armaments into a hot war or a civil war. And this has been overturned. We are indeed supplying arms. And at times I have argued, and my friends have argued, that we're too hesitant and it is taking us too long, and we're still moving step by step, and Germany's also providing now heavy armaments, which
Germany has been notably reluctant to do this. Boris Johnson visited Vladimir Zelensky in Kyiv. The British have been remarkably to the fore, particularly given the depth of engagement that Russian interests have with the Conservative Party. Britain has been remarkably to the fore in supplying arms to Ukraine. That isn't the case with Germany, and there has been some diplomatic conflict with whether or not Olaf Scholz, the German Chancellor, could visit Kyiv because of the disappointment that the Ukrainians have with the German government. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's all almost becoming ancient history by today. There was a kind of fallout because the Polish president invited the German president to visit Kyiv together with the presidents of the three Baltic countries, and that had been pre-negotiated by the Polish with the Ukrainians, and everybody who was part of that endeavor understood that this party of five presidents would be welcoming Kyiv. And then in the 11th hour, or even past the 11th hour, all of a sudden, Kyiv signaled that the German president would not be welcome.
That happened for a reason, though.
Well, of course it happened for a reason, but certainly even at that time, Germany was providing arms. Even at that time, Germany was the biggest single donor country of Ukraine over the last couple of years. So I'm not sure it was a very smart move. And the relevant fact is that today this has been overcome.
There has been a substantial conversation
between the presidents of Ukraine and Germany, and now Ukraine says the German leadership is welcome. And since that has been announced already, the foreign minister immediately has been going there. The president of the German parliament has been visiting Ukraine on the 8th of May to commemorate the end of the Second World War, where the Ukrainian people suffered terribly from German aggression. So I think we're on a positive trajectory, and I would not want to emphasize the problems, the hesitations, the mistakes that have been made and that are being overcome, because I think it is important to focus on uniting to support Ukraine.
Okay. You may be aware, or you may not be aware, of two Irish MEPs, Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, and they have taken a remarkable stance, taken an awful a lot of criticism also in Ireland for the stance that they appear to be really very, very close to the Kremlin line, particularly calling for an end to all sanctions against Russia and for an arms embargo on Ukraine. Do you hear, clearly in a minority, but do you hear some of those voices in Germany as well that are just puzzlingly pro-Russian and pro-Putin?
Well, this is not the first time that those two members of the European Parliament have stuck their heads out in a very awkward way. But I'm not completely sure that I would call Mick Wallace's stance pro-Russian. He has.
It would be fair to say that he would be an MEP who the Kremlin is most pleased with.
Would you allow me to end my sentence first?
Because please do.
Before you interrupt, let me start the sentence again.
Sure.
I'm not sure I would accuse Mick Wallace of being pro-Russian, because he has, in clear words, denounced Russia's aggression in the Foreign Relations Committee, but he is certainly anti-EU, anti-UK, anti-US.
Mm-hmm.
And for him and Claire, the main enemy is always our own countries. It's always the West. So they are playing down the responsibilities that clearly reside on the Russian side. I would not accuse Mick explicitly of supporting Putin's aggression, but he is focusing his criticism against our support of Ukraine, and this is completely misguided, and I completely disagree with him on that.
Okay. What I'm more interested in, because that's, I think, maybe costing Mick Wallace support in Ireland more than it's gaining him it, and I think it's not terribly constructive for whatever agenda he's pursuing. But it is clear now that for many years, Russian interests, particularly from the Kremlin, have been pursuing a whole range of influence operations. And I wonder, do you think that there are, aside from people like Mick Wallace and Claire Daly, and perhaps there's an element of it in Die Linke party, the left-wing party in Germany, do you think that aside from that, there are people who really have no sympathy with that type of agenda, but have nevertheless promoted points of view that are to the benefit of Russia, or at least are seen by the Russians to the benefit? And I'm thinking particularly in the UK, there seems to have been a lot of covert Russian support for the Brexit movement on one side, and at the completely other end of the political spectrum for the Scottish independence movement. And this is consistent with the sort of doctrine that we've seen coming out of Russia, that they essentially want to promote all sorts of divisions in society. Is it possible
I'm not well enough acquainted with what's happening in the UK to mm-hmm. really comment on that, but I can comment on what I've seen in my own country. And there, I would say, the spectrum of people that have been to the service of Russian interests has been quite remarkable. You have the Social Democratic Prime Minister of Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, who's gone out of her way to help Russia pull off the building of this gas pipeline we spoke about earlier. You have the conservative prime minister of Saxony, who is still opposing European sanctions against Russia. You have the very conservative prime minister from Bavaria, who in January criticized the Green Party's foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, for being overly critical of Russia. You have a lot of business leaders that have taken stances that are very hard to explain in any rational way. So there has been a high level of, I would even say, complicity that is not just residing on the left half of our society, it's on all sides. And with the exception, I would still insist, of the Green Party. But that is something that we have to look into. And at the moment, everything focuses a lot on indeed trying to help Ukraine to frustrate Putin's ambition. But I'm certain that there will be a phase where we have to reckon with what went wrong and how could we allow our country to become so dependent on Russian fossil energy resources, to allow our country to become so blind as regards the revisionist imperial ambitions of this particular Russian Tsar.
Okay, you say, and you mentioned a number of, as you put it, very difficult to explain positions that people across the political spectrum have taken that are to the benefit of Russia and that would certainly be pleasing to Russia, whatever their motivations are. The Atomkraft Aussteig in German means the climb down from using nuclear energy. Germany has been closing down its nuclear power stations. That certainly contributed to the dependency on Russian fossil fuel, didn't
it? No, that is nonsense. That is utter nonsense, sorry. Because when we decided the early 2000s that we would phase out nuclear, we also laid out a plan on enhancing and promoting energy alternatives, in particular renewable energies. And it was the failure of the conservatives, in particular Mrs. Merkel, first to frustrate the phase out, then to turn around on a heel and to repeat the phase out decision under very much more unfavorable conditions, and then still to insist on hemming instead of promoting the development of renewables. We could have gone way beyond where we are, and we would not be as dependent on Russia's fossil energies if the governments led by Mrs. Merkel for 16 years would not have been so much dragging their feet on the energy transition that we have consistently advocated.
But would you accept that, you know, there is energy needed that would not be needed if those nuclear power plants were still going?
Well, sorry, you're trying to make a point that makes no sense in the German context. Germany decided for a trajectory of energy transition, and that comes with two sides to the coin. One is phasing out nuclear, one is promoting renewables. And that was a consistent plan, and it had majority support. You should take note of the fact that in Germany, ever since 1987, two-thirds of the population have consistently opposed nuclear. So what we've done is, in keeping with popular opinion, it was not a coup staged by somebody. It was delivering what the voters wanted from us, and we had a working plan, not just a pie in the sky. And then consecutive governments led by the conservatives frustrated the second half of the plan, and they are therefore responsible for the calamities that we're now confronted with.
Okay. I want to look at the Green Party and its kind of leadership in German society in general. And you're correct to say that the Green Party has been very influential, and, for example, a large majority in favor of transitioning to renewable energy and so forth. And also, this is relevant in terms of Russian influence operations. Germany is one of the countries that has probably the strongest faith, and I use the word advisedly, in homeopathy. Germany has one of the lowest levels of, for example, COVID vaccination in the EU. To put that in context, the figures I'm seeing are that about 20 23% of German people are not vaccinated, comparing to about 7% of Irish people on that. Would you, two parts, would you accept, A, that there is a high crossover between the community that supports the Green Party in Germany and a sort of anti-scientific belief in faith medicine, like homeopathy, and anti-vax feeling, number one? And number two, would you accept that those communities are, A, vulnerable to Russian misinformation campaigns, and B, that the Green Party has a responsibility to lead people on that?
No, I don't accept it. I think that is fake news. You look at what the Greens have been doing in the parliament and in government. And throughout the pandemic, my party was probably the strictest in advocating that we should follow the science and we should promote vaccination and that we should be strict in fighting against COVID. And we have been targeted the heaviest by the anti-vaccination movement.
Mm-hmm. But going beyond the party, I'm talking about the community of Germans. You got nearly 20% of the vote in the recent general election in Germany. So that's a wide stroke of the population. Would you accept that that section of the population, that there's a significant overlap with the section of the population that rejects scientific medicine, that rejects vaccines, and that follows things like homeopathy?
No, it's still fake news. And if you repeat it a third time, it will still be fake news because we have been successful in the most recent state elections, doing much better than we ever did before on the basis of the policies that we have been implementing over the last 3 years.
I'm not denying your commitment to that.
If you think that voters are stupid and don't recognize what we advocate and vote for Greens because they oppose Green policies, well, that's your problem. But that's not my take.
Okay, so and just the facts, as you understand it, you don't think that those two populations are significantly overlapping?
No.
No, okay, that's fair enough. What I wonder then is...
No, you have to stop wondering because I have run out of time.
Oh, well, listen, thank you very much for speaking to me. Reinhard Butikofer, the senior member of the Green Party delegation to the European Parliament, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you for your interest. All the best.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, William, a touchy interview, and maybe with good reason. The Greens are only recently back in government. They were out of power for 16 years. So why mm-hmm. single out the Greens?
Well, first of all, he took the call, which was nice of him, but I suspect maybe he might not be happy with that decision. But I think, in fairness, the Greens have a responsibility. It comes straight from the core of Green ideology to be closing down nuclear power stations and coal power stations. And he is correct to say that that policy wasn't implemented by them. It was implemented by Merkel kind of in a hurry because of the Fukushima that like turned public opinion and they changed their minds on the and public opinion changed on Atomkraft Aussteig. That's the nuclear power climb down, I think, is the literal translation of that. So I think it's worthwhile asking the question. And they're now in government and they have to deal with it.
You contend that the Green Party's base is essentially kooky, anti-vax and in favour of homeopathic remedies, something which Mr. Butikofer denied. Even if that's true, is it a bit of a stretch to link anti-vax sentiments with the effectiveness of Russian disinformation?
I don't think it is. First of all, he said, you know, he denied that there was any overlap, even just in the population of people who are Green voters and people who have a kind of anti-scientific view of medicine, particularly anti-vaxxers and people into homeopathy and so forth. That's just not true. It is observably true that there's a high crossover in the support base of the Green Party, not necessarily the membership or the leadership or anything, but in the support base of the Green Party and the people who are suspicious of conventional medicine. And I was surprised he denied that because it's I think it's something that's just blindingly obviously true. I'm pretty well familiar with German society, and I think I'm in a good position to say that. I don't think that the Green Party has been particularly susceptible to the Russian disinformation about sanctions and about the war in Ukraine. But I think what is happening there, and what I was trying to get to, maybe not successfully, was that if the Green Party are sipping from the well of disinformation about medicine and anti-scientific theories around medicine, then it's very hard for them to turn around and say, no, no, we have to take other things seriously and not pay attention to disinformation. It's a little bit like being a little bit pregnant. You can't accept into your ideological fold some disinformation and not others. But I think Mr. Budikoff was reasonable in pointing out that the Green Party have changed from that position pretty radically, and they're by no means the biggest offenders in Germany. The AfD, the far-right nationalist party, and the Die Linke, the far-left party, have much more of a equivocal stance towards sanctions on Russia and supplying arms to Ukraine.
Okay, well, anticipating your next question, there are other parties that have, I suppose, anti-vax supporters, and why burden the Greens with responsibility for solving the anti-science problem in Germany?
Well, because they're in a leadership position. They're in government. They were in danger of being the largest large party, but they're certainly one of the large parties in Germany, one of the big three parties in Germany now. And I think, when you're in that position, you have a responsibility to lead the public conversation. And I don't get the feeling that the German Green Party is doing that adequately. I think at some level they're definitely trying to move to a position that the war in Ukraine has made it obvious is necessary. But I think in some levels they are squirming. And in particular in Berlin, the Berlin government is essentially dominated by the Green Party and a fairly left-wing faction of the Green Party and Die Linke, this far-left party. And I have been seeing, and it's really remarkable, and I'll put up the tweets and some screenshots on the notes for the podcast, but it's really remarkable that the Berlin police were enforcing a rule against what they called extremist symbols at demonstrations around the 9th of May, that's to say the victory day for the end of World War II. They were enforcing not allowing people to fly the Ukrainian flag, just a simple Ukrainian flag with no symbols attached at all, to the extent that they were confiscating clothes from people who were wearing perhaps a yellow and green clothes, and they were confiscating them, while at the same time allowing people, and there were pictures posted online, allowing people to fly in the streets at demonstrations and so forth, the Soviet flag, the Russian flag, and even flags of these Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, these areas that have been under Russian control in the east of Ukraine since 2014.
Okay, thank you, William.
Here's How is Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast.
Go to the website for sources and references from the show. While you're there, you can like the show on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at Here's How Podcast, and follow Reinhard Butikoffer at Buti, that's B-U-E-T-I. A good chunk of that is in English. And you can get in touch if you can suggest a guest or a topic for the next show. And thanks again to all of the patrons on Patreon. As I said, we don't get anything like what some other podcasters that I could mention get, but basically it pays for things like web hosting. We basically do the podcast for free, but if you could do the same as the current patrons and donate the price of a lottery ticket once or twice a month, please do go and sign up at patreon.com/hearshow. That link is on the website. Also there you can find out how to subscribe to the podcast for free on your computer, on your phone or by email. All that information is at www.hearshow.ie. On the next podcast, I'll be talking to Frank Armstrong of the Cassandra Voices magazine. That'll be up on Thursday, the 9th of June. The Here's How podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. The assistant producer is Kevin Wolfe. Thank you for listening.